Hi everyone, having a lovely time here. It's a bit bigger than it was the last time I came here in 2014. But I'm glad everyone's having such a nice time. I'm here today to talk about the post office inquiry and the sort of small unofficial aspect that I've been involved in, the transcripts of the hearings. So I thought I'd get started. Has everyone heard about the post office inquiry? Just for those people who haven't, over a number of years, the post office pursued thousands of people for shortfalls in their accounts, which had actually been caused by Horizon, the software running in the branches that was written and run by the international company Fujitsu. More than 900 of these postmasters were convicted of either theft, fraud, or false accounting based on faulty data between 1999 and 2015. Others were prosecuted but not convicted. They were forced to cover the shortfalls out of their own pocket, or had their contracts terminated and lost their post office. Many faced bankruptcy, illness, lost their livelihood, stress, illness, family breakdown, and in some cases even suicide. In 2009, Computer Weekly first recorded the story about problems with Horizon, but it wasn't until a decade later, in 2019, that some of the postmasters won a sub-postmasters won a group action lawsuit, and then from the year after 2020 that the convictions began to be overturned. Many of the sub-postmasters reported problems with the new software, and Fujitsu was apparently aware as early as 1999 that Horizon contained bugs, but the post office insisted that Horizon was robust and failed to disclose knowledge of the faults in either the civil or the criminal cases. Then, more recently, in January 2024, a four-part television drama, Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, was broadcast on ITV, after which everyone suddenly cared about it. It became a major news story, and then all the non-Scottish convictions were mass overturned by a piece of special legislation last week before Parliament closed down for the general election. And I believe the Scottish convictions were all overturned this week. I think they just passed the Scottish Parliament literally this week. In 2020, the government set up an inquiry led by the retired High Court Judge Sir Wynne Williams to investigate, quote, the failings which occurred with the Horizon IT system at the post office leading to the suspension, termination of sub-postmasters' contracts, prosecution and conviction of sub-postmasters. The inquiry is split into seven phases. It's currently on a joint phase 5 and 6 at the same time, holds its sessions in public with a live stream on YouTube. On the topic of this talk, there's an awful lot of effort. There's a live transcriptor at every hearing, typing it all in, and then later the same day or the next day, they upload published transcripts of the hearing online. So I thought, let's start by taking a look at one of the transcripts they publish on the official website. So that is one sheet of A4 paper in PDF format. So it's called a form-up, so it's got four pages of documentation, 25 lines, per page, as one page of A4. They also, thankfully, also published a text version, which is slightly better, more linear, double-spaced, with line numbers, page numbers. It's got the date at the top of every page. It's one text file, but it repeats the date, as you see, every page. So you can download one of these transcripts and use Control-F or whatever to search that for if you're looking for something particular. But if you wanted to look for something, how they've mentioned every time they've mentioned Paula Venables or Alan Bates or anybody or anything across all the transcripts, it's not at all easily possible. And they're not exactly easy to read, just as either a tiny PDF or a text file. So I thought that maybe I could do something better. But you may be saying, why? Who am I to say I could do something better? So over the years, I've done a number of things that basically involve scraping some information from one thing and passing information from another website, and some of which have proved slightly popular. So I started a train website in 2001, which was first only a live departure board like this one, then added journey planning in 2004, which was 20 years ago, so I feel quite old. The official site, one back in the day, had a please wait page when you searched for something. It had an image map. I don't know if you remember that. It had like a map of the UK. You had to click on the region for which region you wanted to look at the live departure board for in like nice multicolours. And it used a lot of JavaScript, was very slow and didn't work. Sadly, things aren't much better 20 years later. But my version's been going ever since then. You can bookmark the URLs, it offline caches, so it works if you're in a tunnel. And it's quicker than the official site, which, given it goes to the official site to get the information, I'm not sure how that's physically, but it is a lot quicker, so that's good. In 2003, I took the Odeon website, which didn't work on my Acorn computer that I had at the time, if you remember Acorns and Risk OS. I used to have one of those, and the Odeon website didn't work at all, but where I was, the Odeon was the only cinema, and I wanted to know what was on. So I made a website that just took the information from the official website and just made it and just made it a bit better. They threatened to sue me, and so it got taken down in 2004, and that got a mention on the Today programme on Radio 4, which was good. Their site, by the way, is even worse than it was in 2004, if you've had to use the Odeon website recently. I haven't kept mine working, sadly, because I don't go to the cinema so often. Theatricalia is a sort of Wikipedia IMDb for the theatre that I run, and to seed it, I screen scraped a copy of the Birmingham, because I live in Birmingham, the Birmingham Repertory Theatre archives from 1913 to 1974, which were on some academic website. And it was pretty good that I did this, especially reference to the archiving talk I went to earlier over there, because that archive is no longer on the internet, and so I now have the only copy online of the 1913 to 1974 Birmingham Repertory Theatre archive, if that's of interest to you. I also have a site showing where all the post boxes are. I don't know why I ended up running that, but the Royal Mail mistakenly provided the information to a Freedom of Information request. The Royal Mail is not the post office, just so you don't, two different organisations of different levels of competence. That gets us from OpenStreetMap now. And then actually, back in 2003, I'd already done a public inquiry website, not to do with the transcripts, but the Hutton inquiry, if anybody remembers that, about Iraq, had made a very bad website. It had frames. You had to have cookies and JavaScript to even like look at stuff. So I made this version. And it's interesting that my version at that website is still there 20 years later, whereas the official site at the time is now a personal injury spamming domain site because they let the domain lapse. So I do recommend that you don't use random domains for historic public inquiries. Maybe, I think there's like an independent.uk or something you could use now that I would certainly recommend they do. And then in my day job, I work for My Society, a charity that helps people be active citizens. We run websites such as Fix My Street for easy reporting of graffiti and potholes. What Do They Know for making Freedom of Information requests, such as the postbox one I mentioned. And they work for you to follow what your MP and other representatives get up to in Parliament, or will do, as we're having a general election. They work for you, although it now does have access to XML data from Parliament. At the time, worked by, you may guess, scraping the HTML from the official website, which was all just black text on a white background, passing it into more structured information and displaying it. So anyway, that's point enough to say I've been doing this kind of thing in many different ways. At one point, we tried to create a generic version of They Work For You that could be used elsewhere. We used it in some places around the world. We called it Say It. One of the examples I set up at the start was the transcripts of the Leveson inquiry, which was the inquiry to phone hacking. This is Hugh Grant's evidence essay to the phone hacking inquiry. And again, the transcripts of this were very similar to what you saw earlier in terms of the post office inquiry. They were either one or four up PDFs of 25 lines, double-spaced. Exactly, so I wrote a parser for that. Also, while we didn't have the resources to continue to Say It, the Taiwanese government took our software, because it's all open source, and still run it to this day as their official published meetings software. So that's the gov.tw. That's the software that I wrote just for this, and so that's interesting. Anyway, so I already had some code that could handle transcripts that were similar to the post office inquiry, but I didn't want to have to run another service. I haven't got the time or the energy anymore. But I wanted it to be as low maintenance as possible. So the first thing was hosting. Where was I going to host this website if I was going to run it? And at this point, I had a brainwave. Now, there's a website called Read the Docs, which is used quite a lot for hosting Python, quite a lot of Python documentation, and other documentation as well. But I think it was originally like a sort of Python service. It converts structured text data in like a restructured text format, like a text file with like a bit like Markdown, and converts that into published nice pretty documentation, and also automatically indexes it for easy searching. And I thought, well, a bunch of text transcripts for public inquiry, that's sort of documentation of, you know, it's documenting the public inquiry, so I think that covers enough documentation. And it can automatically update with every commit to a repository on GitHub, so, you know, as soon as everything has a change, it can automatically update the website. I don't have to do anything, perfect. It can generate tables of contents automatically, so I can just say phase 4, phase 3, phase 2, and give it the directory, and it will go through and automatically add a day page for everything. So as new transcripts appeared every day, it will take care of everything to do with it. Great. So now I just needed to take the transcripts and convert them into the right format to be able to go on and read the docs. And actually, I say just, and obviously it's not just. I never like the word just. I don't like the word just. But I part of this talk, I'm hoping that you can see that it's not a complicated thing, and that like you don't have to do like it's not complex. It might be complicated, but I mean, like, everyone could do something like this if there's something like this that they feel that they could make a bit better. So I generally split up any scraping task into two phases. There's fetching and then there's parsing. Fetching is where we get the data from the source but don't change it much. And then parsing is when we turn it from one format into the other. Fetching is generally the easier of the two, though that's very dependent on the website and the data. So in the next parts, I am going to show you some code, but I don't know how much codey the audience is, so don't worry. You don't need to know any coding. I'm just going to show you sort of like the interesting bits of it. So, for example, the post office inquiry script has two fetching scripts. This is the entirety of the first one. There's some imports at the top. But anyway, it's basically just 50 lines of code. It goes through to the official website, which has a list of hearings. It loops through the list of hearings for everyone. It fetches the title, the date. It looks for an iframe, which is how they've got the videos from YouTube. And then it looks for the text file link for the transcript. And then it downloads them all. And that's basically all that does in a big loop. When they decided, incidentally, to run phases 5 and 6 together, which they weren't originally going to do, they've just been doing them one at a time, but the title they put for it was phases 5/6. And if you're a bit of a coder, you might realize that I've got a bit here where it's like the output file was just title.txt. And so when they started putting phases 5/6 in the title, slash it thought was a directory, and so it tried to save and it all broke. There's a bit of maintenance involved always, as everyone's never going to do exactly as you expect. And then the second, which is even shorter, this is the evidence fetching script, which again, they've got their website is very similar for hearings and evidence. It just loops through every evidence file on the website, the PDFs, and then just stores the title. It doesn't download all the evidence, but it just stores the title and the file name, which we'll see later what that gets used for. And that's it. That's the fetching done. I just download it all to a directory on my computer and on GitHub in the end, and does a few things. So the second step is the parsing. So just to remind you, this is the text file, what we've got. So 25 lines of indented. You can sort of see that whenever somebody speaks, it's all in capital letters when they start. But then once they've picked who's going to be asking and answering the questions, they just do Q&A. So Q dot and A dot for questions and answers. They've got headings you can see are sort of indented, Kevin Philip Shields, sworn, questioned by Ms. Price. And then you can see there's an indent, which sort of is indented with the Q and the A, but you can see Ms. Price's line, could you confirm your full name, please, Mr. Shields? They've indented Mr. Shields, not with her name, no, but with the Q and the A for the rest of the page, and then some of it's not indented at all. The time at the top isn't indented. Anyway, so they're inconsistently indented, so my first step is to strip the line numbers and remove the indents. So the code's not important, that doesn't matter. Here's the code. It's all on GitHub if you want to look at it later, but don't worry about it. So stripping the line numbers, we go through, and that's also the good check, because I've got this data, I'm going to be changing something else. I want to check that I haven't lost anything in doing so, because there'd be nothing worse than me passing a transcript and missing out a very important line, and then everyone getting very cross. So it checks that there is lines 1 to 25 on every page, checks the page numbers are going up one at a time, then takes them all out. And then it removes the indent on the left-hand side. I'll go back. Oh, no, I've gone. Where am I gone? I'll go. So it removes as much indent as it can do without removing any actual text. Some of them are all indented. So get rid of that. So now we've removed the line numbers and the page numbers, and I think it also removes the data at the top that's repeated. So we now basically have something we want to go through line by line to work out what it is. So I think I've spoiled most of that already by what I was saying, but it's just some regular expressions. I like regular expressions. I know they get a bad rep, but I like them. So if it's in brackets on its own, it's the time, or it's a message about lunch. If it's a thing that starts with a bracket and then it's like some stuff, but there's no bracket at the end because it's always either the hearing adjourned or on behalf of, it's a two-line heading, which is very annoying, and you have to deal with that specially. But there's not many of those, so that's why it's that special. If it's a question, it's always further question or questioned or examined by, and that's always in the same format, and then there's always the name of the thing. They don't have many headings. It's a public inquiry. It's all very formal. It's all very similar. And then lastly, if it's a heading, it's going to be focus group session or housekeeping or an announcement, or just somebody's name all in capitals. Names are always in capitals, which is quite helpful. Subheadings have people's names in, like I said, so that's spotting the ones in the opening statement by blah. If a witness survives, it's always in a certain format or so. And then, if it's Q or A in a dot, we know it's a question or an answer, which we've worked out from before, whether it's a heading or something like that. Or if there's a new speaker, it's all in capitals, or MUC. I haven't had a Mac yet, but I've had a MUC, so I'll have to special case that as a couple of things. So it's just basically a few regular expressions just to spot out the structure from this text file. And then if we haven't matched any of those, it's just a normal line of text. So then we have the very, very complicated, if it starts with 8 spaces, it's a new paragraph. If it doesn't start with 8 spaces, it's a new line. And then, so that sort of, that is basically how you take that giant long text file and just work out all the structure from it. Well, there's a little bit more, because we want to remove the middle names, because again, it's quite formal, and so every time someone's introduced, it's with their full name, and you don't want to print their full name for the rest of the document. So we remove all the middle names, which we do by just spotting out the special cases and things. And there's a couple of people whose formal name isn't their actual name. They haven't been in touch, I just like, you know, they always refer to it like that. So again, you can just add a couple of bounded exceptions as they arrive. But once it's gone through all of that, and we've got it internally in a structured format, we can then write it out in the format that Read the Docs then wants. So this is that bit. It's the most ugly bit, I'd say, because I was fully tired by the time I got to this bit. But as you can see, it's another big loop. It loops through every speech. It prints out the headings. It prints out the speeches. So two levels of headings and the speech itself. And the speech we don't do much to. Again, I add a couple of links. You remember earlier I said we fetch the evidence. So here's where I add links to the evidence. So now when you're reading the transcript, you can click on the evidence and it will get sent through to the... you can go to the official site and read the evidence, which is very handy. And it adds kind of acronyms and else makes the speaker's name in bold, so all that kind of stuff. Anyway, the third and final step is, how do I keep this up to date? I don't have time to run this thing every day. I probably do, but I shouldn't. I don't want to. I want it to all run itself, so I don't have to remember to do that every day. So GitHub have this thing called GitHub Actions, where they can automatically run stuff when you push a change, or they can run stuff on a timer. So just at lunchtime every day or 3 times a day, that's the whole action. There's nothing, that's it. It just basically does what I said. It installs the code, it scrapes the official site to see if there's a new page, it passes it into structured format, it commits any changes, that updates to Read the Docs, which is all automatic. And eventually, and so it runs automatically every day, I don't have to touch it. And finally, you end up with a website, which looks very much like Python documentation. But that's fine, it's the content that matters. I didn't have time to make it, you know, you can make it look pretty. It doesn't have to look like that, that's the Read the Docs default, but you can make it look much prettier and different if you wanted to. But I quite liked it, it works fine. It's got all the links. Here's an example transcript page, which is a bit easier to read than a text file. As you can see, it's got the video down here in the corner, so you can watch the video while reading the transcript if you want to. It's got people's names in bold. It's got links to the evidence. It's got links to the judgments and things like that. So it's all quite nice and easy to read. Here's the search results. Oh, and the big thing, yeah, you can search across the whole corpus of all the data sets. So here's the... So they always have a fire alarm every Wednesday at 10. So here's searching for the fire alarm. So they will have to just sit there in silence while the fire alarm test goes on. And here's one more transcript. I quite like this one. I wonder if the Inquirer are using this, because this is sort of Mr. Beer, who's like the head QC of the whole, like, asking questions on behalf of the Inquirer. Here is him asking a witness if they know something, and then they say they don't remember and they don't know it. And here he is saying, so I'll read this out. It says, just for the transcript, for later reference, here are the documents that have got the answer to the question that you didn't remember. But they're not linked yet, because the Inquirer don't release the documents until they want to put them in the public domain. We don't know what they say. So this is Mr. Beer referring to the future, that these will become clickable. At the point at which they release the evidence, my site will pick that up and then automatically make those links to the evidence on the official site. So someone reading this will then be able to read the evidence that he was talking about in the future, even though it hasn't happened yet. Which, I don't know if he did that deliberately or just as a note to himself, but I thought that was quite clever. And then, as opposed to all the other things I was talking about earlier, the Inquirer got in touch with me and asked if they could link to my site from the official site, which makes a slight change from some of my previous projects. So, I mean, it should be, it's all released under... government copyright, it's all open anyway, so I don't think they could have asked me to take it down or anything, but it's very nice of them to want to link to it and say that you can use his site to search it and find information. So I hope that was an interesting look into how the site works and how it runs, and I guess the thing I hope to take away is, apart from how could this whole awful thing have happened, is that ignoring any shiny, fancy, hyped up new technologies, whatever they may be, there are sort of so many things like this that could be easily better with the tools that we already have. And so it'd be great if there'd be like more things like this could happen in the future. Thanks very much. I'm in the Q&A tent after everybody else's questions.